Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk about networking. A special place where we never have to apologise that you, the listener, don't know what a packet, a router, a fabric, a TCAM is. And here today in our virtually converged boardroom, where all the chairs and tables are converged into a unified stack of virtualised infrastructure, we gather to wave our hands at the virtual whiteboard, breathe virtual air and discuss virtual topics that, well, who knows? Because today, it's openness and freedom all the way as we discuss OpenStack. Before we get started with today's show, let's get around the table and introduce everybody who's hanging on. You might know me. I'm Greg Farrow. You can find my blog at etherealmind.com, and I am on the Twitter as at etherealmind, and I am regularly hanging around the show on Packet Pushers. Joined today by Brent Salisbury. Brent, how are you today?
Doing well, Greg. Looking forward to the show.
Tell people where you live.
In Kentucky and the U.S. and blog at Network Static, and I'm on Twitter at Network Static.
And also joining us today is Colin McNamara. Colin?
Hi, my name is Colin McNamara. I usually say sunny Silicon Valley up in near San Francisco. I blog at colinmcnamara.com, and my Twitter is at Colin McNamara.
And joining us today is Kyle.
Hi, Greg. My name is Kyle Mestre, and I'm actually in Minnesota in the United States as well. My Twitter handle is actually Mestre, and I blog at siliconloons.com.
Welcome to the show. And finally, Rob Hirschfeld.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Greg. I'm Rob Hirschfeld. My Twitter handle is Zeacle. I blog at robhirschfeld.com, and I am in sunny Austin.
Austin. Is that in America?
It is in America, and, also in Texas, which not everybody would agree is the same thing.
I was just checking. I'm never quite sure. I never got taught American history at school. It's kind of different for me. I'm like that, though. Today we got together to talk a bit about the OpenStack components. In particular, OpenStack is a system for virtual management and orchestration. Maybe somebody else would be better at telling the people what OpenStack is.
I can definitely put the foundation perspective on it. OpenStack is a collection of projects that with the goal of creating a cloud infrastructure, a shared cloud infrastructure that's community built and maintained. That doesn't really tell you much about what OpenStack is. I'll step back a little bit from that. You know, the idea here is that OpenStack's job is to help people run workloads, do work, create useful applications in a way that's consistent across multiple data centers. The idea is that we want to be able to sort of unify computing at the cloud level. I'm trying to avoid using the word cloud to define it, and create a series of APIs and implementations of those APIs that allow people to do useful work on the internet across data centers, across the planet, across different facilities and capabilities.
Look at it in the way I've been, you know, contributing and participating here is that I first got introduced to OpenStack at some really forward-looking people in customer base just over a year ago that were looking to create effectively open-source alternatives to Amazon. You know, the high level, the foundation of creating APIs that are open and consumable and shared platforms and integration between multiple projects and kind of creating a stack and a suite. But from a consumer of it, more on the operations side, both from my own internal infrastructure as well as our customers, it's literally connecting, contributing to, and creating platforms that functionally, even if you look at the features that come in, it's an open source equivalent to Amazon. And then encouraging the different manufacturers who participate in that, as well as, you know, the Amazons, the Rackspaces of the world, the cloud service providers, to be able to, that same service that we can build in our data centers up at externally hosted places.
So OpenStack kind of started around this sense to public cloud providers at scale to deliver basically infrastructure as a service. Are you guys seeing a shift into more enterprise interest from your customer base?
It's really remarkable how broadly people are interested. Cloud in general and OpenStack specifically. A lot of times when I define, Amazon did an amazing job defining this. Cloud is really an API for infrastructure. You know, we find that people really want to be able to control their operating infrastructures using, you know, consistent APIs, and even more importantly, one APIs that they can use, whether it's internal in their own deployment, so enterprise, private cloud from that perspective, or hosted, outsourced, so public cloud perspective. But the operative thing to me is really people want to be able to take that work and then automate it, script it, move it into a location where they're much more elastic and flexible. in how they run their applications.
Got to have this roadmap that shows how to fairly clearly create a hybrid cloud situation to where you have resources at your local site, you want to maximize your spend and use 90% of those resources, and then let's say 1 week out of the year or payroll at the end of the month, you can now take that and elastically burst that to the cloud rather than buying two times the amount of gear. I'm kind of curious, how do you monetize that?
Think of a provider, right? So provider and gear, and at the end of the day, you know, it's all about solving problems for people. The real challenge is, it's just like any systems integration, is helping them down the path of solving their own challenges, whether it be a consultancy, helping to build infrastructure, or, I mean, look at Rob's doing of writing functional code to help them consume infrastructure the same they would have a program. There's the free open source side, but I always tell the story of, you know, I came to the Bay during the dock. When I came to the Bay, I had a whole bunch of compact servers that I ran my infrastructure on in the company I came to. I was building my new infrastructure, which is a pretty big web services infrastructure, had a portion of HP, Adobe, and Microsoft's sites actually ran in mine. And I actually built it on Linux, a free open source operating system with Apache that had been emerging. Dell had actually, a couple of guys had gotten together and ridden, I think it was a team of five, and had ridden the RAID array drivers and contributed them and ridden drivers for remote administration and made it so I could utilize free open source code that could absolutely be used, connected with more highly available hardware infrastructure. So it's kind of the meeting of the minds. That company at that time, this is back during, you know, gosh, a long time ago, their contributions to open source in combination with the way their hardware integrated was able to solve problems. I see, if you look at companies trying to monetize this, I see that with the hardware manufacturers. Absolutely. You look at what EMC is doing right now, or Dell or NetApp, they're all writing adapters to make it so their shiny, blinky things connect into this free stuff and make it more stable or make it grow faster. Or even, you know, conversations with the Aptera guys. You know, they were, the RSA Web guys that were building an entire web services infrastructure said, you know what, it is cheaper for us to contribute open source code to this because we were making our own web platforms and spending a huge amount of development effort into it. And now that since we're contributing to OpenStack and consuming it, that it's actually cheaper for us to get our product to market. You have enterprises that have been paying millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars in some case, for virtualization platforms. Or maybe they're paying tens of millions of dollars to Amazon. I mean, it might be valid, might be not, but they can start contributing core developers both in to contribute their own needs and focuses into the project. But the ROI, the actual profit in this is that they are spending less than they would with another external provider or with a enterprise software, and they're able to actually put features they need in their products.
I think the enterprise angle is really important. In my environment where I'm working today, I have a huge VMware estate. And as you say, the licensing cost is multi-millions in terms of purchase. And then the maintenance cost of that software is phenomenal. And the constant upgrading of it is challenging. I don't think we want to lose our VMware commitment because I think VMware is great software. But we are looking for ways to say not everything needs to be on a number one AAA rated Mystic Magic platform using EMC storage with Cisco UCS. There's parts of our business which runs non-critical, like our dev platform, for example. It could run just as happily on an OpenStack as it could in production. Why aren't we looking at certain things to run in an OpenStack environment and defray that cost? And as you say, in a perfect world, we'd either skill up on OpenStack and even in a better world, get enough skills of somebody in-house to contribute and offset their cost against what we might have paid as a licensing fee. And I think that's a win for enterprises if they can move from you take whatever the experience is that the vendor wants to give you, which is aligned with the vendor's own interest. You know, VMware's got its own APIs, and those APIs only suit EMC's best interest. They rarely suit the customer's best interest. Whereas we can take OpenStack in a direction that suits us commercially as consumers if we're willing to contribute.
Rob, I think, sets the golden standard, what a manufacturer can do to contribute to open source and still make money selling their blinky things, right? Cisco also is actually a great example. Many of the individuals see the value within these companies of contributing back. Trust me, I think what I'm starting to see is the large corporations, which are the, you know, I won't say the evil empires out there, but really starting to make positive movements in contributions to open source, and specifically, you know, starting to align resources to contribute, not just consume open sources, which is what we've seen in the past with large enterprise and large manufacturers, but to actually contribute back to it, which I think is what we really need to see.
One other thing to keep in mind here, too, is I think a lot of these enterprise deployments are looking at software licensing costs, kind of going back to what you were talking about, Greg, and saying how much of that paying on a yearly basis to upgrade the software, does it make sense to to hire people to custom configure something like OpenStack to get the features that I want into it, to pay developers for this or to pay some other organization to help me with that, and maybe redirect some of that cost into making something like OpenStack more of a custom fit for their business needs.
Some of this we'll see trending over time. Right now we're very early in the market for OpenStack in that, the people who are contributing are much more invested in operating and extending and things like that. And we're starting to see another wave. We're really trying to enable another wave of users who want to take OpenStack without all the modifications, right? Who want to be able to take advantage of the innovation and the pace of innovation, which is really exciting. And I think one of the things we want to really talk about today, but at the same time, they don't want to have to make the same level of investment. Today, expect to see that in the OpenStack community. We're getting into a place where there's more people who want to use it without the consumption. Monetizing it to me is very much about helping connect our customers and our users to their own value. When we add a whole bunch of things in the middle that we want them to pay money for that don't help them produce what they need to produce to make money, then we're out of the chain a little bit. OpenStack is trying to create this core of things that everybody needs to have as a common element.
It's the open versus curated argument. Apple gives us a curated experience, which is this is how the phone should look and this is the way the software should run, and we make it this way and we take out all the things that we don't think you should want or have. And I see that as how VMware approaches it. They choose what they think is the best thing for their customers and promote the value out of that, which is fine. But OpenStack comes to it from a more open source or an Android sort of a vision. If I can be so bold as to reduce the metaphor to something so simple, Android can be anything to just about anybody. There's a core set of functions which are shared, but anybody can use it in the way that you're free to use it in a way that suits you. And OpenStack is based on that freedom model. There's many components inside of OpenStack, and each person can use the one that suits their business the best.
Well, it's kind of interesting too. I went out and grabbed some beers with Sean Roberts, who's over at Yahoo, and he's on the board and aligning their contributions and participation. And he's like, oh, yeah, fly down to talk to a group of companies about how these companies, which they make similar products, but they also have similar needs. The discussion is how can they align together and drive contributions, four or five or six different companies, even though they may not have, one, two, five, six core devs on their teams, to be able to align for their very specific industry need, help evolve OpenStack in that specific direction. And this is something where, the niche is small enough where it wouldn't even get the attention of VMware or Amazon or whoever. I think it's a great example of how, we almost look at co-ops happening. And if you look at, open source itself, it's cooperative development, right? That the interesting thing where OpenStack and the foundation itself is really acting as a bridge between these, it's not just a guy coding at night in his boxers, right? These are companies that have businesses to run, and they're able, to your point, Greg, allow for the shared things that drive all their business together and enhance the velocity of that development and control over it.
The amazing thing that OpenStack is doing is really exemplifying that this is turning into a consumer-driven economy. It's vendors figuring out how to react to that and how to add value. So we're commoditizing these resource pools, and then whether it's local or whether it's remote, Rob mentioned earlier. So let's kind of transition, since some of us are network nerds. Let's talk about Open vSwitch and what Kyle's been doing with that project. Kyle, do you want to talk about what Open vSwitch is and how you've been contributing there?
Yeah, absolutely, Brent. So for those who don't know, although this is the Packet Pushers podcast, I got to believe most folks know, Open vSwitch is an open source virtual switch. It was actually upstreamed into the Linux kernel recently as well, the kernel portion was. Open vSwitch itself is composed of two pieces, a kernel module and also a user space daemon, which actually handles the switching implementation in user space and also implements things like the OpenFlow protocol there as well. The typical use case for Open vSwitch is to either control it via some sort of external entity controller, like an OpenFlow controller, or it can also effectively work like the Linux bridge does, where it can handle basic L2 switching and Mac learning locally as well. So most folks that use Open vSwitch, especially with OpenStack and with Quantum, are going to be using it with tunneling. And right now, that's typically done with GRE tunnels. Recently, as in the last couple of weeks, I was able to actually get the VXLAN tunneling protocol pushed upstream into Open vSwitch as well. So when the next version of Open vSwitch is released, it will actually have the VXLAN tunneling protocol in there as well.
It was funny when you announced it on Twitter, everybody's like, oh, that's the encapsulation. It's not the control plane. So maybe talk that you're planning
yes.
on the multicast component.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what went upstream was essentially the framing format for VXLAN as well. The exact same way that you do GRE now in Open vSwitch, you can actually do VXLAN as well. The intent and the plan going forward is to actually implement the multicast learning control plane as well in user space, so we can have the full IETF compliant implementation of VXLAN in Open vSwitch as well right now. I should also note that there was a lot of work done in the months before this to refactor the tunneling code in Open vSwitch as well. And the work that we did there was we were changing it so instead of it being a port-based tunneling model where effectively you needed ports for each tunnel endpoint, we could do it on a flow basis and effectively aggregate the flows over a single port in the data path. So that was a significant amount of work that was done before that. And there actually is still work going on in modifying the tunneling code in user space as well at this point. Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting things going on in Open vSwitch right now.
Kyle, it probably took me a good whole night to kind of deconstruct Quantum and figure out, okay, where is this tunneling? When you think of tunneling, we're thinking, okay, well, I'm going to tunnel from router A to router B. But when you're talking about tunneling, you're talking about multi-tenancy within the hypervisor, and you're actually saying, from the hypervisor, I'm going to tunnel to my VM I just spun up, whether it's GRE or VXLAN, or isolate that with VLANs.
Absolutely. That's one of the great things that, you know, any of this on-host tunneling like GRE or VXLAN or NVGRE, one of the great things it allows is it fits really nicely with multi-tenancy. And so effectively what we're doing when we're talking about tunneling with Open vSwitch and Quantum is we're creating tunnels between the hosts basically over an L3 network to allow for multi-tenancy spread out across your OpenStack Quantum deployment as well. So we're allowing tenant VMs to spin up wherever they want to in the infrastructure and then essentially communicate with each other host to host over a tunnel, whether that's GRE or VXLAN or whatever you want.
Today we've got Linux bridging, and then we've got the Quantum components now in the core came right out of incubation last cycle. Do people need to use Quantum if they don't need the services that Quantum can offer?
That actually ties through a couple of topics that we want to discuss, and I'm going to try and decompose them, but because what you're describing is a migration between the initial OpenStack networking models, which did not have the level of sophistication that Kyle was discussing, and there are a couple of network models, some based on VLANs, some based on a much more flat IP space and just trying to protect the virtual machines from each other. But what we're coming to with Quantum, which really creates the type of segmentation and appearance of network isolation that is important. The challenge is we're in a transition period right now. So we're trying to get OpenStack network models to switch from what's called Nova networking, sort of the way Nova started, and is very similar to what you would see in an Amazon networking scenario, into something that is much more robust using a project called Quantum that replaces Nova networking. One of the challenges we have is that you can't have both. You need to have your VMs your VMs spun up using one networking model, Quantum, or a different one, Nova networking. And so we're in a transition point where we're trying to deprecate and move people off of the Nova networking models and into Quantum. Challenge we have is that to use Quantum, there's more overhead both from an operative perspective, an operations perspective, and then also from being able to use the APIs to configure those networks. We should actually talk about what Quantum APIs are and what they do and how an operator would use Quantum in a cloud and infrastructure as a service. A lot of what I've been focused in OpenStack is helping people operate OpenStack. So not writing the OpenStack code per se and not deploying applications on it, but that mystery layer in between known as DevOps, where we actually build the infrastructure so that people can consume it. So that's been a really active focus for me and my team. I'm going to stick to the top level, the user level. So when somebody who wants to build an application on OpenStack, on the cloud, comes to do that, right now there's a set of APIs in OpenStack Nova, which is the compute side, where you can request a virtual machine of a certain size with a certain capability, tell it to inject your SSH keys, you can tell it what ports you want able to talk to that that virtual machine. All those are really focused around bringing up a virtual machine. And there's a whole bunch of assumptions made about how it would connect to the outside world, that you'll get an IP address and be able to just talk on that IP address. What Quantum adds is this conceptual virtual networking layer where you can say, okay, I want to actually define the ports and then connect those ports to a virtual network, and I want to take that network and then connect that network to the public network or to other machines or to other networking services like load balancers that the host might provide. And so instead of just getting some default big public space and getting your slice of that, you're actually able to build up, just as if you were doing a physical network deployment, you're able to build up a virtual networking infrastructure with switches and links and VLANs, and not VLANs per se, really, they'd be more like to your VM, they'd look like a physical network topology. And so there's an API around Quantum that allows you to attach your machines, your virtual machines, to networks and create connections between them.
It's basically a primitive. It's not going to go in and configure VLANs. It's an abstraction that a vendor then brings their networking agenda in and conform it to this API so that it can be translated through an OpenStack API request and then instantiated into the hardware or into the software networking stack. Is that fair to say?
Right. And we're getting into an exciting, this is part of the bootstrapping of Quantum. We're getting into the potential to have some very exciting cloud infrastructure components, both licensed and open, where you know you can have a load balancing service that would attach into the Quantum APIs, or you could have a firewall router, so we talked about hybrid, where you could actually automatically connect between your local site, your private site, and your public site, and then have that automatically tunneled between the two clouds to create one cloud. One of the other things that people get very excited about, the potential here is that you can have overlapping IP address spaces between tenants. So instead of being forced to take providers' IP ranges, you could actually stipulate your own IP ranges. All those are really common use cases that people want to see in cloud, but you have to be able to build your network up from these primitive states to create them.
That starts to be really important if you're an average enterprise and you want to extend your network into the cloud and then still kind of maintain your policy application, whether it's security, whether it's traffic, you know, inspection, DNS, all those sort of things that are kind of private to your enterprise, you can now leverage into the public cloud.
Well, and even more than that, when you look at, you know, there's a lot of big talk out there about SDN and, you know, software-defined networking. One of the larger challenges is how do you have a consistent presentation of services and features to your infrastructure no matter where it is, right? And if you look at where one of the most exciting things about Quantum is that, one, you're providing, you know, a programmatic interface for requesting and applying these features, all the open source projects aligning around it, or code. If you look at the load balancing as a service code that got put in there by Mirantis, brilliant, right? It's just like, hey, here's a simple way of integrating and configuring a couple of different load balancing vendors and providing it as a service to be consumed. And a lot of the discussions in the design summit, the Grizzly Design Summit down in San Diego, were, at least in the Quantum side, I think Kyle and I were sitting in the back room together on this about, okay, you know, which services should be consumed here. And I think what's coming out of it, at least what I see, is where in the past we would have to actually engineer, you know, service insertion points in our networks. Now it's engineering how it's presented and consumed. And so no matter where it is, whether it be a cloud far away or a cloud in your data center, that you can say this is the standard application of load balancing, of security, of tunneling, of acceleration down to my applications or my servers that run them.
I've installed OpenStack an ungodly amount of time. It's pretty complicated. I really see people like Dell and Cisco and vendors that are really embracing this is there's going to be a whole tool set that's going to be available around provisioning and under kind of translating these kind of tricky services for those that don't have DevOps and I simplify that out. A direction that you guys think you're going towards?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm having to do it myself. It's one of the biggest challenges for our own internal stuff. The features are moving so fast that if you focus on just installing all the components manually, what will happen is a new project comes out or every 6 months, you know, a new version of OpenStack coming out and you get stuck with a stale version. And Kyle, I won't name the customer name, but remember at the OpenStack meetup in Minnesota, we were talking to that Agile team. It's like, crap, we're stuck on Essex. And we got it going, but now what?
Right, right. And this is, that's absolutely important. And agility with this stuff is very important. I think this is where you, this is where we can kind of start to talk about DevOps as well. But instead of approaching it from the angle of, you know, operators becoming more like developers, it's like what Colin was talking about. Developers are becoming more like operators. You as a developer have to be able to install this stuff somewhat at scale. You have to be able to automate its deployment. All of these things are important as a developer of OpenStack. So a lot of this is leading developers to become more like operators, as much as DevOps seems to be focused on the reverse. You know, things like OpenStack are leading developers really, really to become like operators, to learn how to install this stuff, how to do it at scale, how to automate it. You know, tools like Cobbler and Puppet and Chef and Crowbar and all these things are important, even for developers.
If you're going to do development of one component of OpenStack and it's getting big enough that that's, you know, I think it's impractical to try and span multiple projects to any large extent. If you really want to make significant contributions, you have to have a way to be consistently up to date with, you know, what's going on in development. And this is the dilemma. I don't think we've entirely solved this, although we're working to try and help address this, and tools like DevStack help address it. But if you're going to make contributions in quantum and be engaged in the networking, you're going to be impacted by things that are going on in Nova or in Cinder, which is the block storage capabilities. You have to have an operative deployment to be able to make those changes, right? And I think quantum's much more important from a multi-node perspective, because you're really talking about bridging nodes together. So you have to, you know, you can't separate your development effort from your deployment effort. You have to have a rational way, even in early development, to be, you know, consistently deploying recent code that is repeatable, stable, that you don't have to learn how to do it over and over again. And the community is making a lot of progress in this. You know, you're seeing Chef and Puppet scripts moving into the upstreams where they're collaboratively built. You're seeing tools, you know, Crowbar been a really real part of this. We really are trying to do a pull from source approach where we can bring in the latest code and allow people not have to wait until there's a release milestone where, you know, all these things have been packaged up. You could actually work with raw code, write your own code, be on your own fork and test things. And that's important.
It's funny, you know, for the SFA OpenStack meetup where we grabbed IPv6 DHCP as our next, as what the team's working on next. And one of the challenges was just that. So, you know, we were looking at, you know, there's a lot of continuous integration suites out there like Jenkins and such for continuously building your own project. But as you have a distributed team working on and having to write your test scripts, and that distributed team may work for different companies, to even have, like, you know, almost came with a term, I don't know if it's probably termed already, but continuous deployment to handle both the, to pull certain reviews or certain new projects out there to integrate and integrate that in our testing. One thing it's extremely challenging. It's not well defined or fixed in the community. I'm actually really interested in hearing more about continuous deploy portions of Crowbar, because we're actually jerry-rigging some stuff up together with FPM and then building packages to auto deploy with Puppet Crowbar. It's absolutely, not only is it a challenge for shared development and joint development, but then also coming right back to, you know, the people that are, when we're maintaining our OpenStack based clouds, of how are we continually building and, frankly, come into a continuous deployment process versus restart an entire design deployment cycle every 6 months.
Right. We have to get out of that path. And that's something that I'm seeing the community having a lot of interest in a more continuous process. So we hear from customers, and this is very relevant from on the networking side even more, because, you know, we've seen quantum progress over the last two major releases, and I know we're going to continue to see an accelerating pace as, you know, as people move off of Nova volumes and we get more critical mass. We don't want to slow down and have fewer milestones, the 6 month cycle. We actually, in some ways, are moving things faster, and we're seeing more need to take intermediate milestones and have a more continuous process. Obviously, I think we still need major releases for the market, and I think people want stability that we're going to get from a six-month release cycle. If you're intent on contributing, we need to have, you know, these monthly sync points are really important, and we don't want deployments to wait because you learn too much in deployment.
I think you nailed something right there that, you know, we get so focused on putting your feature in that when you throw a workload on it, you absolutely new things are always found to be able to get that before a major release.
And that's something we see people being very interested in. And as much as we see customers wanting to say, all right, just give me Grizzly or just give me Folsom, you know, at the same time, we also see them saying, well, it's only 6 months. Maybe I should wait. And then, you know, and there's always some bright new shiny thing on the horizon. We're trying to get people out of that cycle. It's one of the reasons for us we see Quantum as really significant. Deploying on Nova networking today, it's stable, it's practical, it's been in field for a long time, but we don't have a very good story for getting people to Quantum from there. And so we really want to see people stepping into Quantum and then, you know, being able to stay there. And so we're straddling this challenge where we want people to be adopting Quantum. It's still stabilizing. It's still becoming, it doesn't have the development eyes on it yet that I'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to both stabilize and provide a migration path because, and we had alluded to this earlier in the call as well, at this point, the Nova networking code is effectively frozen such that no new features are going to go into it. It's not going to be deprecated now and removed in Grizzly or anything, but effectively feature development is done and everything's moving over to Quantum. There are still a couple of gaps in Quantum at this point with regards to Nova networking. Now, of course, there's additional features and functionality, but a few things are missing, and that's what the target for Grizzly is. I think the hope is that during the H release, the discussion can come about, do we want to try to deprecate Nova networking at this point now? But I agree with you, Rob. I mean, we need to get that level of stability, and we need to also get that feature parity level there with Nova networking. And then it becomes critically important to try to provide a way to migrate customers over to that, to understand what their needs are with regards to that migration and to make sure that happens. And then once we get them onto Quantum, you know, then they can be on Quantum moving forward from there and take advantage of all the new stuff coming out in the next release and future releases even.
From an end user perspective, I think the number one barrier to entry is still this kind of complexity on, okay, where do I start? You go out, you go to blogs and try and figure out ways. You know, you've got DevStack, which is important, which is great, but, you know, your whole config goes away when you unstack it. One really cool thing I saw a few months back was when Rackspace released. Here's an ISO, download it, it's your private cloud. You know, have fun. So it's, you know, a collection of, you know, all the scripts that are going to build that out. Well, are there some other resources that you guys are working on that are available to the community if somebody wanted to get their feet wet?
So I've seen a few of them. There's obviously Juju, which is really neat, right? There's the Puppet Chef stuff. There's Crowbar. And then you see people putting up, you know, consolidating chef manifests. Cisco has their edition, which is a consolidation of chef manifests. And, you know, I'm hoping to see, honestly, I think I wish that people would just start to pop up, you know, even, you know, God forbid, a VMware image with all of it pre-configured. I think what we'll start seeing is the same virtualization guys opening their eye, you know, trying to, actually, I'll just out popped up in my lab. OpenStack first popped up on VMware. So, you know, pre-canning a lot of these auto-deployment appliances, very similar to what Rackspace did.
Right. There's a ton of value in what Rackspace did, having a single ISO image that you can download, pop in, answer, you know, a handful of questions, let it run for a while, and there you go. There, now you can test this out, and it's got a cool GUI and the CLI interface, and away you go like that. So absolutely, that type of thing is great to be able to show people that are new to OpenStack, or even for people that know about it and want to have a way to just deploy it on whatever virtualization stack they have or a physical host, what have you. Just go ahead, try it out. Here it is. That's critically important.
We've done the same thing with the Crowbar deployment where there is an ISO, an open source ISO available that you can walk through the process and build everything.
Hey, Rob, what's the URL for that for listening?
I host the Crowbar, the open source Crowbar ISO is on crowbar.zeacle.com. See, we've been seeing this, and it's a really exciting thing to see all these different deployment scripts. These deployment approaches come up that do a lot of this work for you. And the challenge with OpenStack, and it's getting more, not less, is that you have Nova, used to have everything sort of in it. We're splitting out networking, we're splitting out storage, both of which are significant, important projects. We want to see that. The challenge is the complexity of doing a deployment now just went up, because now you have to connect all those projects back together and you have to get the APIs rationalized. You have to figure out where you want things. And that type of logic is the type of is daunting to users when they first start, operators really when they first start. Users just get the API and they're happy. What we're seeing and we're really trying to support is that a lot of that logic should be in the community, right? I've been a big fan of what I call open operations, where we can share operative logic for this. And so you're seeing Chef and Puppet, the companies behind them, driving community efforts to get shared scripts, shared deployment logic. My team with Crowbar is really trying to drive that, and our plans are to move to the community versions of these deployments, so that we can all benefit from sharing the knowledge, right? When we get a good quantum deployment that integrates with Nova, we want that to be shared, because everybody benefits from working together.
So do you see that as, so if somebody goes to OpenStack.org or to the wiki, they'll at some point it'll be, you know, here's this installer, use this, and here's a couple different options.
That's what I'm hoping, is that we're going to be able to collaborate, just like we've collaborated on a lot of things, that we're going to be able to collaborate on deployments. And then we're going to have, when you get down in the weeds and you're talking about how it deploys on physical infrastructure, or how it brings in other partners, or then we'll be able to differentiate on those things. It's actually frustrating for me to see similar but yet slightly different, the Alamo pieces from the Crowbar pieces, which are slightly different from community pieces. And it's not right or wrong. They all have they have different focuses and different values. We can bring them together to a large extent, and then we're all taking advantage of each other's work. Now, if you've got 80% overlap, that means we've duplicated effort. That doesn't support the community as well. The challenge is to focus on the 20 and collaborate on the 80. I mean, that's the theme for OpenStack, really. Been very pluggable. Actually, let's jump back to Quantum. One of the things that's really powerful about Quantum's design is it's very pluggable. And Nicira did a really good job with leadership on that perspective. Now, VMware. The idea here is that we have an API with an implementation. Open vSwitch is an implementation of the Quantum API, but you can replace it with other implementations that you can pull in different network managers or different strategies, right? You don't have to use Open vSwitch. Kyle, I'll turn it over to you in a second. One of the things that we're also seeing is that instead of Open vSwitch, you could switch in and do Linux bridges and tie back to VLANs. And there's all different ways to implement Quantum. That pluggability is exactly the type of thing that helps make OpenStack innovative, helps us move faster, helps us be open to different ways of solving this problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And whole Quantum community, which obviously included Nicira and Cisco and a bunch of other companies early on, we wanted that plugability. We wanted to kind of boil down the APIs so that things were very simple and at their most basic, and then allow people to build value on top. And part of that value that you can build is you can do API extensions as well. So if some extra things that you would like to allow people to access via the APIs, you can do that with the API extensions as well. Quantum really is composed of networks, ports, and subnets. That's pretty much what the V2 API is at this point. And it doesn't really get much more basic than that. It's like Rob said, with all of these different plugins available, and the two that most people are probably familiar with are Open vSwitch and the Linux Bridge plugin at this point, you've got your open source plugins covered there. I will also say that there is a really cool plugin from that incorporates the Ryu network operating system. And Ryu is effectively, a network operating system built using OpenFlow. There's a plugin for that as well. And then there's a bunch of commercial plugins, from Nicira and Cisco and Brocade and NEC and Big Switch and all these other companies as well. So part of what Quantum's doing is it's really trying to drive an ecosystem around the networking community, and it's trying to allow it through this API. And I think another really cool thing that you can see how this is happening is the fact that there's another, and I know this talk is about OpenStack, but there's another project called Overt out there, which is more of an enterprise virtualization class open source project. And Overt is actually looking at using Quantum as its networking component. And so that tells you, how, if you're looking for an API in the networking world, an open source networking API, Quantum is really looking pretty nice at this point, and that these other projects are looking to utilize Quantum for their networking aspects as well.
There's a lot of competition for that network API going on. So we're seeing Nicira turn off into some OVSDB. We're suddenly seeing the MPLS folks develop an XMPP face for their network configurability. And then, of course, we have OpenFlow. And then there's the vendor proprietary solution. solution. So we've got Cisco going even further afield with even more features in their 1PK stack, and no doubt most of the other vendors are going to come out with their own versions of the same thing. So there's a lot of networking APIs to be considered, but the one that I'm most fond of right now is Quantum in OpenStack, because it's the one that's got real momentum behind it. It's actually very popular, and that's what you want.
One of the things I'm hoping we'll see, and I think the examples we're giving are exactly right, that we'll see physical implementations that have nothing to do with OpenStack or cloud per se still follow these APIs. I've heard of instances on the block storage side where people are setting up block storage and using the Cinder API even outside of OpenStack. It's a logical thing to do if you can write automation or you can use the same API and people are comfortable with it and familiar with it. That opens a huge can of worms from the board's perspective because we have to define compliance and license and brand and also, and it's a huge mess. But it's the type of momentum that we're really excited to
see.
Well,
I'm very big on history, right? So I remember once upon a time there was SNMP, and before SNMP there was a protocol which I've forgotten, and after SNMP there was a thing called Armon. The one we ended up with was SNMP. Now, SNMP is the one that everybody uses, and today we can make it go. It took us a long time. It doesn't matter what the standard is in the long run, we'll always be able to adapt it to what we need, but we need a standard. And at the moment I'm very concerned that we've got too many standards. Although I like the fact that each standard goes about it a different way, it bothers me that there's too many for us to actually keep track of, and in the end we'll do nothing, because in networking we've got a unique difference. So in servers, you manage Microsoft servers, you manage Linux servers, and nobody wants to manage them with one API. But when it comes to networking, we've got data centers, WANs, firewalls, QoS, wireless, and we can't have a different API for each one and do an end-to-end flow. And that's part of the reason that I like Quantum, is because to me it seems the most likely successor in that piece of API space, because it'll win in the data center first, and it makes sense to extend Quantum rather than it does to coalesce around a different API for every standard. As we get towards the end of the show, because we have a bunch of very busy people here, Kyle, we were mentioning something about meetups associated with OpenStack. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Absolutely, Greg. The whole meetup concept and the community aspect of OpenStack is really important, and it's really what's helping to drive its success and the interest in it. Recently, Colin and I actually started a meetup in Minnesota, in fact, just last month. We were able to attract 40 people that registered, and about 20, 25 people showed up. And the diversity of people that were there is what you'll see at OpenStack meetups all over the world, in fact. You'll see developers. You'll see people who have just heard about it. You'll see operators, consultants, people on the sales side, engineering, operations, everything. And the great thing is when you come into these meetups, you're part of a community now, and you know, everyone puts their badges away, and we're all focused on OpenStack and helping out. And it's this great community, and the openness and the fact that everyone is helping each other out. And you know, eventually it's great if these meetups can take a piece of code like Colin was referring to earlier, and as a meetup community, go ahead and try to add a feature or fix a bug or something like that. But the great thing is these are what kind of facilitate spreading the message about OpenStack and making sure that everyone's involved and feels involved.
Yeah, I'll second that. So, you know, I'm lucky in the role that I'm in, that I can go play Johnny Appleseed, go harass people into contributing, whether it be a manufacturer, whether it be friends out in the community. I think the next meetup we'll be seeing should be with Shannon McFarlane and Scott Lowe. They're putting one together in Denver, or the Denver metro area. I think community, this takes me right back to 1998. Right, 1998 in Linux. And back then, I used to invite people over to the ISP. We had some benches out back. We do LAN games. We're like, hey, guys, check out this new stuff. I got this new, these new floppy disks at this time. Right? I got some new disks. and it is about, you know, look, I was able to get rid of 32 Windows servers. And look, it's running Apache. Right. And things like that, you know, it's one person to another person who's showing, this is how I solve my problem, these side conversations. And that's how community is driven. That's how implementation of large implementations of open source are driven, from getting to know people or succeeding themselves. So yeah, anything we can do to, I think as a community, as even as individuals, you know, Kyle and we discussed flying out to Denver to help Shannon and Scott kick off their meetup group. You know, I started where Sean Roberts set up a meetup in San Francisco in Silicon Valley at Yahoo. It literally triggers, you know, if one of us helps one meetup get started, you know, next thing you know, we have people using and contributing and driving the direction success this thing's moving forward all around the world.
Totally. One of the things that we've been doing in the meetups that we sponsor in Austin and Boston are streaming them. And we're starting to drive, and this is what's so fun. It's not just the local community that we're starting to be able to drive. We get people who can participate in these meetups in a much broader perspective, because there's real content, there's real data, there's real people talking about these issues. We're starting to take meetups, not just within the communities they're in, where I think face-to-face is critical, take those great conversations and allow them to be broadcast.
That's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'm personally delighted to start talking about OpenStack because I am excited about the future of OpenStack myself, and having read a couple of quick introduction papers and been following along on Brent Salisbury's blog at Network Static, I get more excited. Unfortunately, I haven't had enough time to dive into it, so I've got these intelligent people making me look wise. So don't ask me questions about OpenStack. Get in contact with them. Let's go around the table and say thanks very much, Colin, for coming on the show. Tell us where people can find you.
Yeah, and you can find me at ColinMcNamara.com for the blog, Twitter at ColinMcNamara.
And Kyle, where can people come and find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mestri, and I blog at SiliconLoons.com.
And Rob?
You can find me on Twitter at Zeicle. Z-E-H-I-C-L-E, and I blog at robhirschfeld.com.
And Mr. Salisbury, thanks very much for putting together today. Where can people find you and learn more about your meanderings and musings?
I'm on Twitter at Network Static, and I blog at networkstatic.net, and I'll work with the guys from this and get what they recommend as some starter kits for everybody that are out there, so that if anybody's interested. I think personally, I've learned more than I probably ever want to know about data center networking just by digging into OpenStack, so I think it's a great chance for people to kind of learn something new.
Yeah, I've actually picked up some fairly interesting stuff around studying up the storage module and then discovering clustered storage and then realizing why we invented fabrics for Ethernet. But that's a show for another day. So thanks for joining us. As always, you can find more details about our show and the show notes related to this on our blogs at packetpushers.net. You'll be able to leave comments. You'll be able to also come over and join in the discussion at forum.packetpushers.net, where we can have real long-form discussions instead of either doing it on the Twitters, where you can find the Packet Pushers as at Packet Pushers. Remember to check out Packet Pushers' website. There's a group of blogs. If you too want to blog and join us to share knowledge with the community, just send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and we'll get you signed up. As always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.